chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Bruce Sheridan on the show today. Bruce is an author, an EOS implementer, and the president of Life Compass, Inc. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, Bruce, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. Thank you so much, my friend, for making the time to be on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So you and I was trying to think about this. Where in the world? I always like go back to the origin of how I meet someone. And to be honest with you, I can't even remember. You're just always there.
I remember.
You do?
Yeah, well, I was working the kids ministry at the Crossing, and you were walking down the hall, and I had seen you all over LinkedIn, and I came up to you and I go, Lisa Nichols? And you were like, yes. I go, well, nice to meet you.
Oh, my word. I don't remember that. But, you know, I mean, we go to the same church. We go to the Crossing Church, which is a multi-site church here in St. Louis. But then you and I mean, it's just like we just seem to be in the same room a lot. And I'm really grateful for your friendship, Bruce. And, you know, we've got so much to talk about today. And, you know, I'm just going to kind of jump in here. Bruce has written a book called A Well-Launched Life. Jenny, you want to take a picture? I don't know if you can or not, but he's written this book, A Well-Launched Life, and it's really for young people. And I had bought this book when Bruce first wrote it. But then when I read the book, I understood a lot more about Bruce and what he feels like his calling and his true passion and purpose in life is now, which is really to help young people and primarily 18 to 28. But you'd probably go up to 30 or something, right, Bruce?
Well, I've had people in their 50s and 60s say, where were you 20 years ago?
I know. So, I mean, you've done so much in your life professionally, but, you know, this is what you say you feel like your purpose is now. And so, like, I understand so much more now after digging into your book, Bruce, of why that is. But, you know, let's just kind of take it back to the beginning. I know you grew up in New Jersey, Union, New Jersey, which I think is a suburb of New York. It's really New York, right?
Well, it's right across. It's Union City. Union is near Newark, New Jersey. Union City is right across the Hudson River from Manhattan. So I could get on a bus and be in Manhattan quicker than people that lived in Manhattan.
Yeah, yeah. So you were the fourth child of six children, I think, right?
Yes.
There were six children in total, and you were the fourth child. You know, but this was crazy to me. I'm just like, oh my goodness. I mean, things could have ended so differently even when you were 2.5.
Yes.
You had an incident happen when you were 2.5. Tell our listeners real quickly that story.
Yeah, sure. My mom and dad went out, which they didn't go out often, but my aunt was watching us. And my mom and dad knew I wasn't feeling well, but when they got home, I was really sick, in bad shape, like an infection, sinus, and et cetera. So my mom put the humidifier out with water and then Vicks Vapor Rub in this little well. So back in that day, they would boil the entire pot of water, and then the steam coming out would melt the Vicks Vapor Rub and fill the room. Well, my crib was in the corner, and I was not getting any better. So my mom, in the middle of the night, got up, put me next to her, and aimed the mist into my face, which helped me fall asleep. But somewhere in the middle of the night, I rolled out of that bed, and I landed on the cord, which pulled the whole humidifier off the end table, and it broke. The glass broke, and I was laying in boiling water with Vicks Vapor Rub in it. And my dad was a fireman, so he jumped up and got me, and he burned his feet getting me. But he knew enough. He put me in a clean white sheet in cold water, and he had my mom call the hospital ahead and said, my husband's bringing in a burn victim. He's probably going to be there in 10 or 15 minutes. So when we arrived at the hospital, they were waiting and came rushing out. They grabbed me and rushed me into a room that had a bathtub full of ice and water because they wanted to stop. It's a little morbid, but like if you cook a steak, it keeps cooking for a while. Right, so they wanted to get me in that ice tub of water to completely stop the burn. And then they came out and told my parents, he's not going to live through the night. So it's crazy.
Oh, my God. But here you are, you know, and we're going to talk. You spent 6 weeks in the hospital.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about this, Bruce, because really, when I look at your life and so much of your life, God has handed his hand on you.
Yes.
Your whole entire life.
Yes.
And it's truly protected you from all kinds of things that could have gone a different way, sideways. But grade school was really hard for you. I was like reading about the nuns. So you went to a Catholic private school and reading about how they would like hit your buttocks and your hands with the rulers. And, you know, it was tough.
Sister Superior had boots, and you didn't want to get near those boots.
Oh, my word. Yeah. I mean, they just.
I'm not sure I was an angel, though.
Well, I know you weren't from the book, because what I read in the book was that you get in trouble a lot.
Yeah.
And they would write notes to your parents.
Well, they would give me the note to bring home, and I would throw it down the sewer. And then my parents came for parents' night, and they were like, "How?" The Sister Superior said, "Why don't you answer any of my notes?" And my parents were like, "What notes?" And oh boy, did I get in trouble.
They were mortified, I bet.
Yeah. So I had an older brother in the school, and the Sister Superior started giving him the notes. So whenever he got a note, he would tease me, and I would. He was a lot, 3 years older, and I'm jumping up trying to get the note out of his hand. And he wouldn't. I would try so hard. He'd bring it home and give it to my parents. I'm like, oh, now I'm in trouble again.
No. Oh, my goodness. Wow. Well, then you went to public school. Your parents had two more children. And, not to Bruce, I don't mean at all any disrespect or dishonor your parents, but you grew up in poverty. I mean, you really did. Very impoverished. And your parents, once the two additional children came, they could not afford. So you went to public school. And then you faced all kinds of different things, right? And the gang. The gang of four that was the bullies,
Oh, my gosh. Interesting. That's almost unbelievable. They broke the teacher's foot. They broke her finger. They broke her eyeglasses. They turned her desk over on her. They turned down over a fish tank, and it went flying across the room, and all the fish were flapping. And then they also were physically abusive to all the kids in the class. It was so eventually, at the end of that year, three of them got sent to quote unquote reform school, where, when they have troubled kids, they get them out of the system.
Right.
So then after that, it kind of was normal. Oh, and then my fifth grade teacher was a lot more strict than the fourth grade teacher, and they did not mess with her.
Right.
Well, they use her name whenever they say, who is your favorite teacher on a security question? I use my fifth grade teacher's name. So I can't tell you because then you'll get into my checking account.
We can't. Yeah. You could tell us, but you'd have to kill us. Right. So we're not going to do that. But you kind of described her in your book, and it reminded me, if you remember Matilda.
Yes.
It kind of reminded me of Miss Trunchbull.
Yes.
Matilda that really, cracked a whip, but she brought law and order.
Absolutely.
Again, to the school. But, you know, that was terrifying for you, though, Bruce, you know, to have to go to school and face these bullies every day.
As a child, you don't understand how much it impacts you emotionally. You just don't. You're thinking, hey, like I didn't realize, to me, growing up in Metro New York City, I thought the whole world was like that because that was where I was born. So when I went to Georgia Tech, where another guy from my high school went, we're driving down the highway and we see open fields and we're like, where are we? And then we saw a cow and actually stopped the car and got out. That's the first time either one of us saw a cow.
Oh, my word.
Oh, my goodness. 18 years old. People like, didn't you see a cow in the zoo? I'm like, tell me what zoo has a cow in it. Like, that's not a they right. don't put cows in the zoo because they're everywhere.
Oh, my word. Gosh, I didn't know that story. Yeah, but it's all about perspective and what you're exposed to, right?
Yeah.
Bruce, and so you just thought this is kind of normal, but something that wasn't normal. And it just, I told you off on side conversation, it just broke my heart when I read this. But, and again, no dishonor to your parents, but your dad was unfortunately abusive, and I'm not just talking verbally, but he was also physically abusive to you, the other children, your mom, and your mom. But I'm sure that she did this out of fear, and she loved him. You know, Bruce, there's no doubt that your mom loved your dad, but out of fear, a lot of times she defended him. Because I remember one time he hit you in the mouth and you lost a tooth.
Yeah, I spit my tooth out in my hand. Yeah, and then going to the dentist, I told my mom, I'm fed up. I'm telling the dentist. And she was driving with one hand and smacking me over the back of the seat with the other hand and telling me, don't you dare tell him. Mm-hmm. I think back then there was no support because she right. came so close at least 5 times, if not more, to getting us out of there. But there was no support system. She had
no
money.
Where was she going to go? Where
nowhere.
Was she going to go? Yeah.
Nowhere to go.
And now we have, to your point, we have places, safe houses
yes.
and things, you know,
yes.
that, you know, and obviously you had to work with a therapist and, you
yeah.
know, work through forgiveness, you know,
yes.
with your dad, Bruce. And we're going to talk about another life event that happened when you're 25. And I know that's helped you work through
yes.
that forgiveness. But here's what you said. As a child, you are a victim.
Yes.
But as an adult, you're a volunteer.
Yes.
So as a child, you don't know any better. You are truly a victim. But when you get to be in adulthood, don't enable that kind of behavior. And don't,
yeah.
you know.
I was probably 16 when my dad struck me twice. And I just stood there and looked at him like, that's all you got? Because I don't know. I had this growth spurt and I graduated high school 6'2", 195 pounds, and it was muscle. So about, you know, sophomore year or so, I was starting to get big and strong, and he hit me twice. And I just looked at him like, that's all you got? And he knew, he never struck me again because he knew I got away with that one, but I probably won't get away with it again. And he never struck me again. And if I was in the house, he wouldn't strike any other family member when I was in the house. So it's an illness. His father was the same way, and then he was. And it just gets passed down to generations.
Generational. Well, and I was thinking about it, Bruce, you know, and you've heard this adage, but so true. Hurt people hurt other people.
Yes. Yes.
Hurt people hurt other people. And your dad, that's the way he grew up because his father was abusive. But I know through the power of Jesus Christ and your faith, you've broken that cycle and you're not that way at all with your four boys
no.
or your wife, you know. So anyway, I mean, you know, if you are a listener and this resonates with you, first of all, I mean, Bruce, I am sure would love to talk to you. He's had a therapist. He's had to work through it. But, you know, don't stay in that situation, you know, and certainly don't allow that with children.
Yeah.
So, where you can
yes.
help it.
Absolutely. I'll be absolutely willing to talk to anybody.
Well, let's talk about it then. So like you left at 18 and you went to Georgia Tech. This is funny to me, though. You wanted to be a pastry chef. In fact, Bruce, I find this so curious because you when you're coaching young people, I know one of the things that you really try to get to is what do you dream about?
Yes.
What are your dreams? And you had big dreams. You wanted to be all kinds of things. Tell our listeners some of the things you wanted to be.
Well, my dream, I love New York City, and I just wanted to be, let me back up. On the holidays, ever since I can remember, I would help my mom cook the cookies, cheesecakes, cakes, pies for the holiday season because we had a big family. So at one point, probably like junior, senior year in high school, I did all the baking for the family, Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever, Easter. And I applied to Cordon Bleu in Paris and got accepted, which I never dreamed would happen. And I'm like, okay, we're talking the 70s, mid-70s, and I didn't even, there was no smartphones. I had to go to the library and look up where is Paris in the encyclopedia. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to get there? I don't speak French. Where am I going to live? How am I going to pay for it? So they gave me 30 days. They said, you need to answer us in 30 days. And boy, I just fret for 30 days and I realized I can't pull this off. Because as you mentioned, my family was very poor. I worked my way through college as it was. So I got rid of that dream. But then I also had the dream of being an SR-71 pilot. SR-71 is an Air Force spy plane. It's classified, but it goes 2,000 or 3,000 miles an hour at an ungodly, not like 50,000 feet up. The enemy can't even hit it with a bomb because they can't shoot a rocket that high. So I wrote to my congressman and I got a nomination to the Air Force Academy. I was so excited. I had to go for an all-day physical and they found this little broken bone in the base of my back. Well, I got a letter in the mail said, the school has rejected you. So I called my liaison officer. He goes, look, you can get in. He goes, but that's the flight. They're not going to let you be a pilot. And I'm like,
that was your dream.
Yeah. And I already had been accepted to Georgia Tech. So I said, you know what? I'm going to pass. I don't want to. It's like my dream's dead. So it was heartbreaking. But I went to Georgia Tech and had a great time. College, when you're in it, isn't so much fun. But once you look back at it, it was fun.
That was a lot of fun, right? Compared to paying bills in real life, right? Of course, you were doing that. In fact, listeners, one of the things I found out about Bruce has an incredibly strong work ethic. He's resilient. He's got grit. He's got determination. He's very entrepreneurial, all these different things. But you started working a paper route, Bruce, when you were 10 years old.
I did. Yeah. And I was supposed to be 12, but the guy said, how old are you? And I knew I was going to be 11 in a couple of weeks. So I said, 11. And he goes, when's your birthday? I said, a couple of weeks. So I didn't mean to like mislead the guy, but in his brain, he's thinking, oh, he'll be 12 in a couple of weeks, but I was going to be 11 in a couple
11.
Weeks.
Oh, so my goodness.
When he found out my real birthday, he wanted to let me go, but I was killing it. So he's like, just don't say anything if anyone asks you. And then I just did my paper out.
Yeah.
I got up at 5:30 in the morning.
You would get up before school. You got up before school and did your paper route. I mean, that just showed so much grit, even back then, Bruce. But, I think sometimes hard places, and that's probably what you really talk to kids about today, is sometimes removing the struggle is the worst thing that we can do for young people, right? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, before we go to our break, let's kind of talk a little bit, get into what you did at Georgia Tech. So you got a BS in industrial engineering, then you went on to get a master's in industrial engineering at University of Miami,
right?
But you got hired by Florida Power and Light. And I think you were there for quite a while, nine years. Now, is that what you did where you guys won the Deming Award and you got into Malcolm Baldrige?
Well, we actually pretty much created Malcolm Baldrige. We won the Deming Prize. Well, my first 2 years, I was designing the electrical systems and I was having a blast. And our CEO went to Japan and he found Kansai Electric. He visited there and their meter readers were at 20 misread meters per million meters read. He said he spent an hour arguing with them that it can't be a million. And they finally convinced him it was. Because we were 8 per 1,000, which is 8,000 per million. So they were like 15 per million. We were 8,000 per million. And we had 4 million customers. So we had 32,000 Misread Meters a month, where they had, what is it, like less than 100. And he said, I'm doing this. So he came back home and implemented what we call the Quality Improvement Program. Mm-hmm. And the Miami Division VP told my boss, I remember I interviewed Bruce Sheridan at Georgia Tech as an industrial engineer, and I think that's what we need to put this program in place, because I was doing electrical engineering work, but my education was industrial. So on a Friday afternoon, she says, no, Thursday afternoon, she said, go down, you're meeting with the division VP at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, put a suit on. So I got down there early. I was beautiful offices, and it was just, I'm like, wow. And I go in there for the interview, I drive back to my office, I'm exhausted. And my boss calls me and she goes, what happened down there? I said, oh my gosh, I thought it went well. What happened? She goes, he wants you to start Monday at 8 o'clock. I'm like, this Monday? Because that was Friday. So from Thursday afternoon, I'm running around engineering jobs. And so from Thursday afternoon, I'm going down there at 8 o'clock on Monday, and I'm in charge of this quality improvement program. I had no idea what it was.
How old were you, Bruce?
25.
25 years old. That's just nuts.
24, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, yeah. It was. Because I'm going in these rooms. His leadership team, they were like in their 50s. And here's this kid coming in. And I'm sitting there and I am like, I left with a headache for like 3 weeks because my brain was exploding. Mm-hmm. But we did it. We had Japanese counselors come and teach us how to do strategic planning and measurement and really get in touch with your customers. We had a program where we went to our customers to see how the electricity would help them serve their customers. And we went to our suppliers and our suppliers' suppliers. It was an amazing comprehensive overhaul. And we went from one of the worst utilities in the country to one of the top.
That's
and thousands
incredible.
Of people came to visit us to see what we did. So it took us 7 years to win the Demi Prize.
7 years. Wow. Yeah. Well, I mean, again, that just explains to me so much of why you're doing what you're doing today,
yes,
you know,
is.
With EOS, and we'll get into that. We do need to take a quick break, though, and then we'll be right back with Bruce Sheridan on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Bruce Sheridan. So, Bruce, oh my goodness, we have still got so much to talk about. So I hope you've got the next 3 hours free. We've got so much left that I want to talk to you about. But what I'd really love for you to tell our listeners, you had what I would consider, and it truly was, a come to Jesus meeting when you were 25. So you're at Florida Power and Light. You've got this big, huge job leading, but there was something else in your life going on that I think you were pretty good at hiding this from employers and stuff. But tell our listeners what was going on. What happened?
Well, the very first day I started, I'm walking into the building. I graduated college with $110, and Florida Power and Light loved, they were recruiting engineers in droves. So I was coming in that day with 11 new engineers. It was a new class. And they provided me a hotel and let me use an FP&L car. So I'm walking through the parking lot and a guy pulls in with a Porsche Targa convertible. And he gets out and he's really dressed dapper and he's like, he saunters in and we go in. I said, hey, and he says, hey, we go in and we're in this. He's one of the 11 with me. So I'm thinking we became like really good friends.
What kind of salary did he get?
Same as
what kind of starting salary?
He had supplemental income.
Yes.
Come to find out, he was in with like the big drug lords of the 80s in Miami. Well, we became such good friends. We go to lunch one day and he says, you mind if we stop by the bank? I'm like, no. Pulls in, he's talking to this woman through the window, and they are just in Spanish. He was Cuban, and they're mucking it up. And he turns to me, he goes, "Hey, can you get me the money out of my glove box?" I press the button, the door falls down. There's a stack of $100 bills, probably 5 inches tall, with a handgun on top of it. So I'm sitting there staring at it, and he's chatting away, and he finally says, "Hey, come on, man, you're going to give me the money?" And I said, "There's a gun on top of it." He goes, "Well, we'll pick it up." I'm like, "I've never touched a gun in my life." He goes, "Just pick it up and don't point it at me." So I grab it by the handle, and I'm pointing it down between my legs. And I grab the stack of $100 bills and hand it to him. He puts it in, and he's starting to drive up. I'm still holding the gun. He goes, "Put the gun away." So I put it in the glove box. He shut it. And we're driving, and I didn't say anything. I finally said, without looking at him, I said, "What was that?" He goes, "Oh, just some cash I had from the weekend." And we didn't say anything. We drove back to the office, and I knew what that meant. So it was a little bit of a hiccup, but we were still really good friends. And then he took me out on the town, and this is like stuff you see in the movies. And so the very first time we went out, I'm thinking, if I have to pay part of this bill, I'm not going to be able to pay my rent. So
yeah.
I ask him, I'm like, "Hey, how much do I need to pay you?" He goes, "Oh, don't worry about it." He just slaps down like several thousand dollars on the bar. And I'm just like, "Oh my gosh." So eventually he said to me, "Hey, you're from New York City, right?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Your parents still live there?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Hey, would you like take a load of cocaine for us to New York? We'll pay you $2,000 cash." And I was broke. "And we'll pay you $2,000 cash, pay for everything, all expenses, and we'll hand you $2,000 cash when you come back." And I'm thinking, "Oh, wow, I could really use that money." So I said, "Let me think about it." So a few days later, I said, "What if I just did it once?" He goes, "Well, if you do it once, they're probably going to ask you to do it again." I said, "But I'll just say no." He goes, "They'll kill you." I'm like, "Well, then I'm not doing it." So thank goodness I didn't do that. Then he says to me one day, he goes, "You want to try cocaine?" And I was like, "No way." 3 or 4 months, he kept poking me, not aggressively. So one day I said to him, "Okay, look, I'll try it, but let's do it on a Friday at 4 o'clock. So if I freak out, I can leave the office and nobody will notice." So we go in the bathroom at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon and I try it. And at first I was freaked out, like my sinus cavity just went crazy and I'm thinking I'm going to die. So we go back to our desk and then that calms down. And then I feel like good. So about 20 minutes later, he says, "You want to try it again?" I'm like, "Yeah." So we go back in the bathroom and do it again. And then about 20 minutes later, I say to him, "Let's go back and do more." So he rushes me in the bathroom. He goes, "Listen to me. This will destroy your life. I'm not giving you any more. And if you do it again, you got to realize this will destroy your life. You better get a grip on it." So he scared the crap out of me. But I went back to our desk and I started to go out with him and party more. So one day I was drinking and doing cocaine all day Sunday. And I had to get up for work on Monday. And I realized I had to call my boss and lie to my boss. That was gut-wrenching. So I lie to my boss. I get on my knees. And I said, "God, I was raised Catholic. And I knew enough about the Bible that Jesus is at the door, but you have to open it." So I got on my knees and I said, "God, do whatever you have to do. Because I'm going to either go to jail or I'm going to die. Please save my life. I'm opening the door." Well, I cried on my knees for like 2 hours. Nothing happened. So about 3 weeks later, my friend lived around the block and he had nothing to do with. He was a Christian at a Baptist church and he had nothing to do with the cocaine stuff. So I go around. It's Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. I go flying in his apartment. If our doors were unlocked, either one of us could just go flying in the other guy's apartment. And I go flying in. There's an attractive woman behind cooking breakfast, and he's nowhere to be found. So I go barging in. I startled her, and I'm like, "Who are you?" She goes, "Well, who are you?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, I'm Bruce." And I still don't remember her name. So I said, "Where's Dominic?" So he comes out of the bedroom with coffee and a cigarette. He smoked 2.5 packs a day, and he goes, "I need your help." I said, "What do you need?" He goes, "This girl won't sleep with me." And it was obvious. It's 9 o'clock on a Saturday and she's making breakfast. I'm thinking she's stayed over. So I said to her, I said, why won't you sleep with him? She goes, well, I'm a Christian and that's not happening until I get married. So I look at my buddy, I go, dude, you're on your own. I am not helping you with this one. So she says to me, are you a Christian? And I'm like, I don't understand your question. She goes, do you believe in God? I said, yes. She goes, do you believe in Jesus? I said, yes. She goes, do you have a personal relationship with Jesus? I'm like, I don't understand that question either. She goes, well, have you ever invited him into your heart and to have a personal relationship with him? And man, my world, everything like stopped. I felt like I was just frozen, but I was still thinking and able to move, but my brain was racing. And I think that was a pivotal moment. I could have said yes or no to that question. And my brain just said yes. So she stopped, put the pan down, took it off the fire. She came over to the island and I was on the other side of the island. She goes, will you say a prayer with me? I said, sure. So I prayed to ask Jesus to come into my heart. And I felt like a bolt of lightning hit me in the chest, like supernatural. Physically, I felt something hit my heart. And I was stunned. And I look up and she's crying and my buddy's crying. I'm like, why are you guys crying? They said, well, you just accepted Jesus into your heart. I said, well, then why are you crying? And they said, these are tears of joy, not sadness. Yeah. And I was like, oh. So I still wasn't sure what happened. And I left that day. And next thing, I go to church with him. It was a bad. So I start going to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. I start teaching high school Bible study. And I can't read the Bible enough. And it absolutely turned my life completely around. Yeah. But that wasn't the end of it. I got a DUI about 3 weeks after that. 3 months of attorney, $3,000 about, approximately $3,000 for the attorney. And I'm thinking, I could go to jail, I could lose my job. So I show up in court. The prosecutor, there were two arresting officers, only one had to show up. The judge says, where are your witnesses? He goes, Your Honor, they both assured me they would be here. And she goes, where are they? He goes, they're not here. And then the file he prepared, it was a mess. And she yelled at him and said, if you ever come in my court this ill-prepared again, there will be serious consequences. Do you understand me? He said, yes, Your Honor. So she slams the gavel and says, dismissed for lack of prosecution. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. So my lawyer turns me around and he points to the back door of the courtroom and he goes, young man, you go through those doors and you never look back. And he pushes me. So I walk out of the courtroom. I'm standing in the hall waiting for sheriffs to grab me. I go out and I stand on the front steps of the courthouse. Nobody's coming. I get in my car and I started to bawl. I couldn't drive. I was crying so hard. And the Holy Spirit was pouring over me because it was about 4 months when I fell on my knees and I said, God, do whatever you have to do. He did.
Yeah.
And I realized at that moment he answered my prayer. It was as if I was never arrested, but I started going to AA meetings. And
doing the work, Bruce, to get
completely. Oh, and I started going to a therapist. I went to first 3 weeks of therapy. I'm like, are we done yet? Are we done yet? And she says to me, we can be done if you want. Am I helping you? I go, I think so. I went every week for 4 years to my therapist, work on myself.
Wow. But
God has blessed me beyond measure.
Bruce, that's why I said when I read your story, I mean, there's more here that we haven't talked about. But I understand so much now, though, why you want to help young people. But it's like I told you, God has had his hand on you.
Yes.
In so many ways. I mean, something we didn't talk about and I don't want to get into it, but I just want our listeners to understand your background and the things that you've been through. That's why you are so equipped, I believe, Bruce, to do what you're doing today with young people. But, you know, you had an attempted suicide when you were 13 years old.
Yeah, it was.
You know?
Yeah.
Attempted suicide. So you've been through so much in your life. And the hard things that we go through, truly, I believe, can equip and prepare us to be a light for somebody else, you know? And when you're working with these young people, I mean, I'm thinking there's not too much that they're probably going to go through that you haven't gone through, you know? And so you're more credible to them because you're like, hey, I've been there. I had an addiction problem. I had a marijuana problem. I had a coke problem. I had a, you know, what is suicide?
Oh, and then what,
anxiety and depression and all of those things.
Yeah. I've been coaching leadership teams for over 40 years. And I started Live Compass 6 years ago, and it dawned on me that, wow, because people have asked me throughout my career, why haven't you ever like gone off into operations or this or that and that? I'm like, I love coaching leadership teams. So for 40 years, I've been doing that. And it's like now God's asking me to coach young people. I thought, how much more training could I have had than to be coaching? Like some were small businesses, and I coached teams at Bank of America, which was a $60 billion company.
Right.
We were Fortune number two one of the years I was there.
Right.
I coached every kind of leadership team, and I thought I could coach young people.
Yeah. Yeah. And
what I'm just amazed at God's plan is so, if you gave me a million times to try to orchestrate my life the way
it all out,
would never have happened.
Nope. I always say, you know, the dots, you know, it's like the connect the dot, you know, it's just a bunch of dots. And then you can look back at your life and go, oh, I see that beautiful picture, you know, that he was painting all along. But I want to, we've got about 10 minutes left, and I want to talk about Life Compass. I also want to talk about EOS because you are a professional EOS implementer. For those listeners who don't know about EOS, it really, it's the, called the Entrepreneurial Operating System. And Bruce, obviously, you jumped on the entrepreneurial wagon how many years ago, Bruce, with your consulting business?
As a young teenager, my dad owned his own exterminating company, and I helped him. He did commercial, industrial. He had a retail store, so I worked in the store. He specialized in rats in Metro New York City. So we called it rat prevention. We weren't going to get rid of the rats in New York City, but we could at least, it's like a burglar alarm, we could send them to the other business versus yours.
Right.
So I would be making these sandwiches with nasty rat poison and cutting them into fours. And I'd go out to some jobs and help them throw those around. And so I had it in my blood. And then when I moved to Charlotte, I was asked to teach at Queens University all the things I learned at Florida Paralight, putting in the Deming Prize system. And I started teaching, and people kept asking me, will you help me? Will you help me? So I eventually left that job, and I went for 6 years helping small businesses improve in the same thing, right? Strategic plan, a good measurement system, getting your processes documented, having, how do you solve problems at the root cause? All those things. And then I called on GE, and that exec wanted to hire me. So I knew if I went home and told my wife they want to hire me, I was done. Because so it was a 3-hour drive from Raleigh to Charlotte. And the whole time I'm thinking, do I tell her? Do I not tell her? And I told her, and right away, you're taking that job. Mm-hmm. So I went to work at GE, and then I got recruited by Bank of America. And then I got let go of Bank of America in that 2008 crash. So immediately I started consulting again, Organizational Compass, and I did that up until 6 years ago. I became an EOS implementer.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So now I'm exclusively working with privately held small businesses, 10 to 250 employees, and they have to be open, honest, and willing to think they could change how they manage the company. Otherwise, it would be a, you know, we have a saying in EOS, if you have to drag them in, you have to drag them around.
Yeah. So you don't want to drag them in. You want them to be willing. Yeah. So for our listeners that are interested in this, I mean, EOS, I've been in YPO, Bruce, since 2005, six, something like that. And EOS is huge in YPO. I mean, everybody read the book Traction with Gino Wickman, but you know, to implement it yourself can be very difficult and can be very confusing. So, you know, if you are at all interested in learning more about EOS, I know Bruce would be more than willing to meet with you. And
yeah. It
is a really awesome way to organize your business.
It is.
So let's talk, you know, in the time that we have left, let's talk about Life Compass. Tell me the main, I know that there's buckets that you talk to young people about. You know, I want you to kind of tell a little bit about that. And then, you know, technology partners, I'll just have to say, our team was very blessed to have helped you with your app. So you actually have a Life Compass app that you can download from the Play Store, whether it's an iPhone or an Android. But tell me kind of the basic elements. How would you start with young people. And I already kind of alluded to this before, but I love, you know, one of the things that you really get them to do is to say, what do you really want out of life? What are you dreaming about? You know, and sometimes, I mean, what do, I mean, even, you know, you tell the story about your own son. Yeah. I don't know.
Yes.
But you really work to kind of open that up with young people. So kind of tell us a little bit about Life Compass.
Sure. In EOS, we help you create your proven process. So my proven process for Life Compass is think about where do you want to go with your life, write it down, measure your progress daily, and then, you know, reassess it every quarter. So that's basically the Life Compass proven process. Now, to take it down another level, I ask them to think about their relationship with God, their relationship with their family, what do they want to do with their career, and then building a budget. Because my son graduated college 6 years ago. And I said to him, so where do you want to live? He goes, oh, I want a nice one-bedroom apartment. I said, how much do you think that'll cost? He goes, like $400. I said, maybe you need to add a one in front of that. He's like, what? $1,400? I'm like, yeah, if you want to not $400, you cockroaches, you know, dirty, you're not going to get a...
not a really nice apartment.
So I was so shocked. I paid 4 years for him to go to NC State, and he did not know, like, a budget. So I sit down with these young adults, but I start out with, if we were having this conversation 3 years from today, what needs to happen personally and professionally in your life for you to think you were successful over those 3 years? And then I put them into the categories, God, family, career, and budget. And that's what the app is too. On the app, you could put up to 5, because I see this with my EOS clients. You can't do 100 things. But I limit them to 5 entries under each God, family, career, and budget. Then each day you can rate yourself red, yellow, or green, and it gives you a pie chart to see how you're doing. So it follows the proven process, right? Think about what you want to do, write it down, measure your progress every day, and every quarter, every 90 days, review how's it going. So that's what I do with 18 to 28 year olds.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So if you are an 18 to 28 year old, or I'm sure 30 or 50, and this interests you, you know, or you know someone in your life, reach out to Bruce. And I know.
Or you can get my book is on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and in independent sites.
Yeah. And I love that you wrote the book, Bruce, because it's kind of a one-to-many model. And I love that. But there's so much good stuff here. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. But I have to ask you, Bruce, this is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra every leader needs?
Resilience. Well, there was a song, I Get Knocked Down, I Get Back Up Again. I think that was my theme song.
Yeah.
So you got to get up. I mean, there have been, when I got let go from Bank of America, I had to carry my boxes through the lobby. And people are like, oh, half of the people ran away. And then the other half came and gave me condolences. It was so humiliating. And I had 2 boxes, so I had to go back and get the other one. And I just put them in my car and drove home. And that was probably the hardest one to get back up again. Because never in my life did I dream I would be let go and walk into my car with my personal
you
stuff.
You never had. You'd always been pursued.
Yes.
You know, you'd always been pursued. But you know what? It was just kind of a sign of the times, though. That was the bottom fell out. You know, the real estate market in 2008, I mean, it was just a difficult time for everybody. But
my something extra is resilience. Like, get dust off. You know, it's okay to take time. Some of it hurts so bad you need to recharge and do whatever you need to do to get back. But don't let anything keep you down. God created us and we are wonderfully made. Get back up and go and be resilient. That's my
Yeah, that's good. I love it. You know, and as you're talking about that, I'm just thinking all kinds of things. One thing that I love, and I think you said this, but you know, for our listeners, if you haven't been knocked down, get prepared, because you will be. I mean, you know, life is not going to be summits all the time, is it, Bruce? But I will tell you, in the valleys, and not that I'm asking for more valleys, but sometimes in the valleys are where we learn our greatest lessons, too. Yes. So,
you know what hit me recently? The earthquake in Turkey, like 35,000 people died and so much was destroyed in the blink of an eye. You know, you could have been CEO of the biggest company in Turkey, and then in a blink of an eye, you're wondering, am I going to live today? Mm-hmm. It can happen to anybody, anytime.
It can. So live every day.
Yeah.
Live every day with meaning and purpose. And so, Bruce, what fun this has been.
Yes,
I appreciate
you,
my friend. I really do. And I know that, you know, what we've talked about here, I know that it's going to touch our listeners. I hope people that are struggling will reach out to you. I hope people that need an EOS, an entrepreneurial operating system for their business, they want to take their business to the next level, I hope they reach out to you. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.